Hello, my finest friends. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Here's a joke from my son. What did the bum say to the other bum? That's a bummer. You know, not for everyone. Look, thanks to everyone who's come to see the previews of Can I Have My Ball Back? It's been going really, really well, and I'm really pleased with how the show's turning out. It's officially on tour now from Wednesday. I'll be at the Leicester Square Theatre. A couple of tickets left. Lots of press coming to that one. It'd be lovely to sell out, but there are a few other London gigs not selling as well. So if you're going to come to London, maybe look up those other London gigs. And then this week I'll be in St Albans on Thursday, Gloucester on Friday, Chorley on Saturday, which is sold out, but you can join the waiting list, and Glasgow on Sunday. Two shows. I think the earlier show is sold out. Check with the venue, but the later show has some availability. Come along if you can. If you enjoy these podcasts and like them being free, then the great way to pay me back is to buy a ticket to a show or buy a download or a book from gofasterstripe.com. But you can just keep listening for free as well. That pays me back also. So, you know, no pressure. But I'd love to see you there. If you just know me from the podcast and don't know me as a stand-up, I'm pretty good as a stand-up. It's a good show. I think you're going to enjoy it. It's only made about seven men faint so far. So, you know, are you brave enough to take the challenge? Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy whichever podcast you're listening to now.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome, London. Welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's officially no longer obese. Here's Richard Herring. Thank you. Much better than last week's audience from back in November. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was hanging around with Joe Pasquale the other day. I've done eight podcasts in the last 8 days. One of them was with Joe Pasquale. He's a fantastic man. Wait till you hear that podcast. Absolutely brilliant. He calls it Hello Stepper. A lot of people saying, oh, I expect you'll talk to him about the Stuart Lee plagiarism accusations. No, of course I fucking won't, you idiots. I'd have to do that to every comedian then, and it would be quite a boring show. So, absolutely fantastic. And he's another guy who absolutely would have fitted in with the alternative comedy. He's very... Well, wait till you hear the podcast. People at home will have heard it already. Yes, I've been on this diet for the last 2 or 3 months. I've lost 10 kilograms. Which meant on Wednesday, for the first time, my BMI was 29.9, which means I was no longer obese. I was simply overweight. It's the most beautiful thing that's ever happened to me in my life. That was before breakfast. After breakfast, I was obese again. It was a beautiful hour. I was amongst the beautiful overweight people. Don't know why I'm looking at you, mate, when I'm saying that. Better than when I was talking about the obese thing, wasn't it? So that's good. Oh, and I should say, Michael Roberts is in the audience. He's come from the Netherlands, probably not especially, for this show. So give him a big round of applause. So listen up, people of London. People are coming from Holland to this show. So come along and see it. Look, we're going to crack straight on because one way or the other, this is going to be a podcast you're going to want to listen to. I don't know about me. We'll see. My guest this week is probably best known for playing Chloe Fairbanks in Spats. I loved Spats. Will you please welcome the amazing Julia Sawala, ladies and gentlemen. Julia Sawala. At last, a guest that's smaller than me. It's fantastic. Welcome, sit down.
You've got high heels on.
I've got high heels. Got to give myself a chance.
How are you? But look at your shoes.
Yes.
I hadn't seen your shoes till we came on. What beautiful. Welcome, Julia. It's nice to see you again.
Thank you. You too.
It's been a little while since I've seen you. I mean, I just saw you backstage. So that wasn't that long ago.
So what is this then? Why am I here?
Because it's sort of like a therapy session for me.
It feels like ex-couples counselling, yeah, doesn't it?
It does, but if I go
for
through...
For you, probably.
For me.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah. If I go through all of my exes, though, it's going to be a long series. So it's going to be a...
Yeah, me too.
I'm the best of your exes, so I don't know. There we go. So that's saying something. Before we talk about that, do you remember being in Spats? Do you remember playing Chloe Fairbanks in Spats?
Yes, vaguely.
Yeah.
I don't remember the name.
No.
I don't know that I played Chloe. I can remember...
That's what IMDb says.
Red, green and yellow squares.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not surprising. It's quite an obscure... Even for me, that's quite an obscure one. I think let's get... I mean, I was a huge... I was and am... a huge fan of yours, but very early on, because you were in a fantastic show that I was too old to watch, but watched nonetheless. That I think defined a generation.
How old are you?
I was
older than me.
I am. So I was too old to watch a children's TV
young.
Show.
Sorry,
no, too old. You were in Press Gang, which I think, for a generation of people. You defined what it was to be a woman, and you defined what it was for men to look for in a woman. It was a great show, right? Press Gang?
Yeah.
Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I have to put all of that down to Stephen Moffat, really, and his writing, you know. And it was just a God-given role for me. And... I don't know why, I just sort of slipped right into Linda Day. She just seemed very
Me
natural.
Too.
I'll get him. Should I start
Sorry,
now?
I couldn't resist it.
But I find that really disconcerting because she was quite amoral and not a very pleasant person. But I seem to really sort of...
It was, everything was fantastic casting in that show because all of the parts were everyone in that. And there was actors who would go on to be, like, amazingly in all kinds of areas, actually. But there was fantastic actors all the way, wasn't there? All the way through.
Yeah. Well, the casting process was pretty brutal.
Was it?
Yeah, yeah. Loads of... can I tell a story?
You can do anything you like.
It's not very interesting, but director Bob Spears, a brilliant director who directed 40 Towers, lots of things, absolutely fabulous, and comic strips. And I had seen him 2 weeks before in an audition for a comic strip film. Nice. I came in, I read, I left. And then I went for the first audition for... Press Gang, and I had by this point I was about to give up because I'd been on this audition circuit for about 2 years and it was just relentless. You know, you'd go in all the chairs, all the same girls, you'd think, oh God. My agent said to me, make sure you go to this audition with a monologue. I said, no, I'm not doing a monologue. I'm not doing a monologue. This is TV. TV, darling. Don't do monologues for TV. And she said, well, just go with one tucked up your sleeve. I was just like, oh, God. And I said to my friend, I'm not going. And she said, my very best friend, who you know very well, and I'll tell you what her nickname is for you later.
Okay.
And so I was sitting in the first audition of three for Press Gang. Let me get to the point. I do digress, by the way, so pull me
That's
back.
That's fine. No,
pull
don't digress.
I was sitting there and there was lots of girls going up for Linda. And I heard this girl upstairs doing this monologue, screaming at the top of her voice, I'm blind! I'm blind! And I said to Janine, that's it, I'm going. She went, no, Julia, don't. I've got a good feeling about this one. And I said, all right. So I went upstairs and there was the board of people, Sandy Hasty, who was the producer, Stephen Moffat, someone else, sorry, I can't remember who. And they didn't ask me to do a reading because I said, I haven't got one. And they said, will you read a bit of the script? So I did, read a bit of the script, went away. Then I was called back and then I had to do a one-to-one with Kelda Holmes, who played Sarah. And we just had to improvise all the time. And a lot of the actors were from Anna Scher. Anna Scher is known for training young children in improvisation, so they are really quick. Right. So it was very, very nerve-wracking for me because I'm from stage school. You know, it's all singing, dancing all around. You know, we really didn't do improv. But we seemed to kick it off, and they didn't know. They swapped us. I then did Sarah, she then did Linda.
Yeah.
So it's quite grueling. When I say brutal, it's it's just, you just feel like you're naked and you're awful and you're dreadful. And then a third audition came up and they'd obviously been doing all the boys as well. And there was this gathering of us, which basically ended up being the cast. And I then had to read with another one of my exes, Dexter.
Yeah.
I was very starstruck because I really, you know, admired him. I wasn't starstruck when I met you, though.
No. Yeah, I don't think you knew who I was.
And so then back to Bob. Bob Spears was then sitting in that audition. And he apparently turned round to Stephen Moffat. Stephen Moffat told me this later, once I'd got the role. And he said, where the hell has she been hiding? And I'd been in his office 2 weeks before.
Right.
So it just goes to show you, I learned from a very young age that if you're not right for the role when you walk in, they really don't take that much notice of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was that boring anecdote. Let's
no, it's
on.
But I think it is because I've been on both sides of auditions, and you know it's really interesting on that side because you know the side that's choosing.
Yeah.
And like so many times you get to a point where you've got two people and it could go either way. And I always say, you know, and like none of the things I've written have gone on to be important, but if it was The Office and it was between you to be, you know, to be Dawn in The Office or whatever,
yeah,
that's a life-changing role, which I think, again, Press Gang was a life-changing role for you. So if you hadn't got that part, I'm sure you would have, something else would have happened, but it was a defining role. Did you have any, when you got those scripts, did you, and because it was like an ITV kids show, so, yeah, but it kind of transcended that and became, you know, something that was put on adult TV as well, wasn't it? It was sort of repeated,
yeah,
later.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, don't quote me on this, Stephen, but I think Stephen was pretty furious all the time that it was on at the time it was on, and they got it, they put it on as late as they could on the children's TV slot.
Yeah.
But he very much wanted to write, because he was a school teacher, so he knew about kids, he knew about teenagers, and so he wanted to write about real things. And I think that's why it shifted to the Wonder Years slot on Channel 4.
That's right, yeah.
Because I think they discovered, well, it did win a BAFTA.
Yeah.
So it got recognition, and I think they realised that a lot older people were tuning into it.
Yeah,
And it did really well on Channel 4.
It did, yeah. It was. I watched it again because I got the DVDs a few years ago and watched it all again. And it's I love that show. And I watched the whole thing, and it does. You know, it stands like it pretty much completely stands up. But you know, it does.
And I remember Dexter saying about the costumes. He said, "You know, the costume director is really, she's really, really clever." And I said, "Why?" He said, "I don't know, there's something she's done with our clothing that's kind of made it look timeless, you know. This is going to work in years to come. It's still going to look all right." And of course it does, because we've all done Full Circle and everyone's back in the 80s now, or 90s. But there is something about it that, well, all the topics are still topical now, aren't they? You know?
Yeah, they are. It's good. And I bet a lot of people became journalists off the back of watching that. I bet journalists keep telling you they became journalists because they're impressed.
I don't ever do anything press-wise without somebody saying it's because of you or because of Press Gang that I'm a journalist.
Yeah.
And I think, that's what I'll say on that. If you're out there.
And looking back at it, because obviously, like, I mean, you were in your 20s, right, when this came on, so you weren't, like, kids, but...
Was I? I think I was 18.
Were you?
Was
okay.
19? I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, is that nearly 20?
Well,
I don't know.
Sort of about that age, but it's you know, it's quite a big thing to become famous that early and, you know, and be in a big hit show. Was there pressures on you? Did that feel difficult or, you know...
No, because it was a children's TV show, so there wasn't that much recognition. I think that started to come when I started to do the sitcom with Linda Bellingham and James Bolam, and then I started to do Absolutely Fabulous, which I was doing in tandem, and that's when it started, really. And then people would say, oh, I watched you in Press Gang.
Yeah.
So the fame thing didn't really happen when Press Gang was on. I only sort of realise now when lots of women say, I used to have your hair cut. And I was like, I never noticed lots of young girls walking around with my hair cut. But
I think
I was well known and I just didn't know it.
I think it really resonated with...
I'm doing that thing that Joe did.
You are.
Why am I doing that?
Many weeks ago, though, but yes.
Oh, sorry.
But the Second Thoughts was a really interesting thing, and it went on to be Faith in the Future, and I'd forgotten Simon Pegg was in Faith in the Future. I forgot he was in it until I looked at it again. I'd forgotten that he was in that.
Yeah.
So, you know, even without that in tandem with Absolutely Fabulous, that was a big, very successful ITV sitcom, right? And then so you were on the BBC and ITV simultaneously.
I was rehearsing Faith in the Future in the mornings in South London, and then I was driving all the way to BBC in Acton and rehearsing Absolutely Fabulous in the afternoon. And then I'd film Faith in the Future on a Thursday evening and Absolutely Fabulous on a Friday. So I didn't know who the hell I was. So by the time I met you, I can imagine what I must have put you through. I mean,
yeah, it was terrible, Jim. I mean, I'm sure we're going to get on to that for a long period of time. You know, it was an interesting time. and an amazing time. I tried to write something about it because it was like that. It was nuts. Like,
A,
it's nuts.
About
you and me. Because A, it was nuts that I'd done like a sketch. So, like, let's talk about this now. I'd done a sketch about you.
Right, yes.
I'd done a sketch about you on Fist of Fun, which you had never seen. So you'd never seen Fist of Fun. And at no point did anyone come up to you and go, have you seen that show on BBC Two where there's a man who wants to put you in a well?
No.
That didn't. No one came and told you that.
I can't remember.
No.
Yeah, the 90s was a blur to me.
And then we met. I remember we met up and we were started seeing each other.
Where did we meet?
I put you in a well. I wrote a script for a play that we sent to you called Excavating Rita. And so you came and which is about digging a woman up out of a grave. You didn't play that part. It was about archaeology. And we sent it to you and you did a reading of the play. And
that's right.
That's where we actually met. So, you know, I wouldn't say I engineered that meeting, but I was very delighted.
I remember it now, yeah. Yeah, I really fancied you.
I know. Who wouldn't?
Yeah. Yeah, you're quite Hugh Grant-like.
And now I still
you
am.
Were.
And now I look like he looks now. So that's good.
I don't think you're aware at all that I liked you.
No, I wasn't because I. No, it was.
It was really annoying.
I was. I was very excited to have you on the project as an actress, and so I didn't.
Thank you for saying that.
I wasn't thinking of that, you know. But no, because I, you know, this what if you go through your CV and you look at everything you've done, you are one of the most certainly successful comedy actors, but also with serious acting as well. But you know, you've done so much stuff. So to get you to come and read for my play was in because it was only a reading in the theatre, and they didn't take it. So you know, thanks a lot. So that was incredible. So I wasn't thinking about that. I mean, obviously at the back of my mind quite a lot, but because, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, I did a joke of that my crazy character on Fist of Fun fancied you, but obviously I also fancied you. So it was sort of a weird thing when, because what happened, in fact, was Paul Putner said to you, after we'd done it all, we went to the pub, we all had a drink, and then Paul Putner, who always does this, who played the Curious Orange, and I said, so, Julia, what did you think about all those sketches Richard used to do about you on Fist of Fun? And you went white and went, what have you been joking about? I knew you were all laughing at me all this time and sort of stormed out.
I did?
Yeah, you went to the bathroom.
Oh, God, and I've done so many storming outs in my life. And I went,
oh, no, you know, this is, you know, it'd been so much, we'd had so much fun and we'd all got on, the whole cast had been amazing. Oh, it'd been ruined. Then you came back and then you said, oh, the reason I'm upset is because I fancy you. And I went, what?
Did I?
Yeah, yeah. And so I was a little bit confused by that. And we sort of saw each other over the next... I think you went away to Jordan, actually. We saw each other for a night or something. And then my dad rang and said,
have I got my passport? He was worrying about my passport.
Yeah. So you went to Jordan. Yeah. And Stuart Lee was in Australia at the time, and I emailed him, said, I think I'm going out with Julia Sawala, and he genuinely thought I'd gone mad.
So I stormed out because you thought we'd all made a joke out of this.
Because it wasn't, the sketch we'd done, Fist of Fun, was about me. It wasn't really about you. I mean, it was about you, but it wasn't really about you. It was about my character, you know, being obsessed with you. In a way that I would make sure I never went out with that person if it was about me. And so then you kept on, like, when we were going out, you kept on saying, can I see the sketch? And I went, oh, no, I don't have any videos.
But I don't understand how we got to go out with each other.
Because you came back, you stormed out and you went to the loo, and then you came back and said, look, I'm upset because of this, and then you explained that you liked me, so we sort of, you know...
That was it?
Yeah, so we started seeing each other after that, because I went, okay, that'll do. Eventually, I took you back to meet my dad.
Oh.
Yeah. And you said, the first thing you said when you're through the door was, Keith, do you have a copy of Fist of Fun on video? And my dad said, yes. And we went straight to the TV to watch Fist of Fun. And it took a little while before it came. I think we'd recorded it. We'd done this sketch quite a few times. And it only got on in about episode 3. I thought it was in the first episode. And the episode that it was in, it was... My dad was a character in the show. It was the Jarred Man of Somerset, which was just like a pickle jar with an eyeball in it, and that was my dad.
Yeah, yeah.
And the sketch began with me going, Dad, and pointing to a picture of you and going, Dad, I'd like you to meet my girlfriend, Julia. Julia, meet my dad, which had literally just happened.
It was life imitating art.
And then the second one is I'm dressed as you in a well with x-ray vision, night vision.
That's really creepy.
Dancing around.
Yeah.
And then, so we watched it, and then my dad went, well, that was a bit embarrassing, wasn't it? So, you know, there you go. But we went to a party, and the writers of Second Thoughts were there, and they called you over and went, Julia, you know that guy? It's the guy who did that sketch about me.
Gosh, you remember so much. I don't remember any of this. Gosh, you went through hell.
I did. No,
so did I.
It's a strange thing to happen to, you know. I think that's it's a really interesting story. I mean, it's a crazy story that you would meet, you know, you would meet the person you'd fancied for ages and then they fancied you back. It's sort of like a Richard Curtis film. In that it's shit. It's shit and disrespectful to women. But But I want to... Also, right, this is, we'll get this out of the way and then we'll go back to your career because it's very important I interview you properly, but I'm going to get all of this out. We're quite different people.
Oh, now, careful.
In that you're quite spiritual and I'm not very spiritual.
Yes, but do you know, I had to Google us on the way here.
Yeah. To remember who I was?
Yeah. I just had to Google it. Just yeah. Think, oh, I thought, I just... Oh, what was it all about? So he actually Googled us. I put Richard Herring and Julia Sawala in. Yeah. And I thought the best thing I can do, because I have asked my friend for references, because I don't have a very good memory. I only have a good memory for conversations and lines, but relationships
and people
seem to
you
go
liked.
Into a blur. But Janine remembers absolutely everything.
Okay.
Where was I going?
We used to go to a health farm quite a lot.
No, what were you saying before that?
I was going, you're quite spiritual and I'm not.
Yeah, so I had to Google us and I thought I'll look at photographs because that might fire up my memory. And then then I read this article of you in the Daily Mirror saying, she's quite spiritual and... I believe in medicine. And I thought.
You didn't believe in medicine.
And I'm pretty sure fairies don't exist.
So
and
we
those were
quite...
your reasons for dumping me.
That's not the reason.
And may I say, he dumped me by text.
I didn't.
Karma. 21 years I've waited for that. 21 years. By text.
That's not my memory.
I got a drunken call.
Yeah.
From you.
You remember this? You remember the end very well. Suddenly it's all flooding back.
Who are you with? And you were with... a lovely friend of yours, I can't remember her name, forgive me. And you were, I'm out. And it was very noisy in the background. I said, well, yeah, I can tell you're out. Where are you? I was just like, hang on a minute. And phone went dead. Next minute, I don't think we should go out anymore. I don't think this is working.
It's not true. I'm too much of a gentleman to tell the true story.
You are a gentleman. I was actually going to say that.
Yeah.
You are one of the most decent gentlemen. You are one of the few gentlemen I've ever met.
No, oh, that's very nice.
Apart and I think, actually, let me run through them. This may take a while. You're the most gentlemanly boyfriend I've ever been out with.
You've been out
apart
with some...
from that moment.
Okay. I mean, you've been out with
some... You just totally let yourself down.
Okay. I think then, if that was what happened, there may have been some extenuating things.
Oh, now you do... Yeah, I hate it when men do that. That's like saying, if you're upset, I'm sorry you're feeling upset, rather than apologising. So what did happen then?
It's not my memory at all of what happened.
No, I'm not talking about the leading up to and why. Let's get back to the why.
Let's go back.
Because I'm spiritual and you believe in medicine.
Well, like, we did a Tai Chi lesson together, so I must have loved you because...
I must have been doing it for someone else, but I can't stand Tai Chi.
We did a Tai Chi lesson and the woman who ran the Tai Chi session said... your spirit guide is in the room.
What?
She said, your spirit guide's in the room. You both share a spirit guide.
Where was this?
It was at Forest Mere or wherever. It was one of those places. She said, your spirit guide's in the room. He's at the back of the room. He's a red Indian. I'd have said Native American. I was kind of embarrassed. I was embarrassed that we had such a stereotypical spirit guide. And I don't know what he was doing helping us out after what... we did to his civilization. So it's kind of, it's, you know, at least it's But we shared a spirit guide, and she said, he's been trying to get you two together for years, and finally he's got you together, and you're going to be together forever because he's managed to get you together.
You dumped me just to prove it wrong.
I've been trying to go at you for 10 years at that point, so he hadn't done a very good job of getting us together. It would have been quite easy. We work in the same job.
These things take time. They take time.
They do take time, and it didn't work out. So a few years ago, I started writing a script about how weird all of this was.
Yeah.
But then it was about me trying to find the woman who could see the spirit guide to get him to explain what was going on and try and work out why we'd broken up.
Right. So you do believe in spirit guides?
Well, within the film, I did. Yeah.
Yeah. you should write it.
I know. Well, I found it.
It's a good idea.
I found it, and we got a sort of distance. Then I met with the director, and he said, "You and Julia should be in it now."
Yeah.
So younger people play us as younger, and we should be in it, and you should be giving your side of it, and I should be giving my side of it. And I thought, that sounds like a bad idea. And it turns out I was right. But it was it was amazing for me. Like, the whole thing was just like, it felt like a spirit guide had brought us together, because it was sort of so bizarre for me, especially. But it was, as you say in a lot of interviews, your sunshine or showers, right? So, you know, so like you...
Well, my mum says that.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't know where the shit came from. So it was, you know, there was some turbulence there in the relationship, which wasn't, you know, between the both of us, because we are quite different. But we still went out with each other for 2 years, and it was like a big deal. And it wasn't until my next girlfriend that I decided never to go out with actresses again. So it's, you know.
So I was just the leader.
I then realised, don't go out with actresses. But it was all so bizarre.
I don't think we were quite different.
I don't think that's a bad thing. I think being different's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, you were just very busy.
Well, I was writing a fucking sitcom.
A fucking sitcom?
I was writing a sitcom that you were in, 22 episodes.
I had to...
It's not your fault.
He was looking for a barmaid. Himself and Al Murray, and they were like, oh, where are we going to find this barmaid? Where are we going to find this barmaid? We need to find someone who can play a barmaid. And I was like, So eventually I had to say... can I audition for the barmaid? Your face, you were like... Can you do an Australian accent? Do you remember that?
I don't remember that.
I had to audition for you and Al.
They made you audition for Al's then wife, who was Australian, to... I didn't make you do that. That wasn't me. That was them. That was Al Murray and all the others. I couldn't believe you wanted... I wouldn't have asked you, because I couldn't believe you would want to be in... You know, you're doing absolutely fabulous.
You think very lowly of yourself, Richard.
I do, yeah.
It's really good time, gentlemen.
It was brilliant. Very good. But yeah, it was...
You were very busy, that's the thing. And so one would say now, after so many years of therapy, emotionally unavailable.
Right.
And I was just bonkers.
Well, we were working together.
You used to spend a lot of time in your office in the night.
Yeah, I did, because I had to write an episode of fucking Time General Police every fucking week. That's why I was in my office at night.
Yeah, but you were doing other things in that office. Right?
Was I? What was I doing in there, Julia? The internet wasn't that good in those days.
It wasn't that. Don't you remember? Oh, well, I won't say. Do you not remember? Everyone, I'd be in bed, and I'm just like, oh, it's 4 o'clock in the morning, still not in bed. And I'd come in and you're like, I'm writing. Can you really not remember
what you
were
doing? Playing Civilization, is that what I was doing?
No.
Okay, fucking hell.
You were gambling.
I was not gambling.
Oh, look at your face. Do you not remember that?
I don't remember, no.
Yeah.
What was I gambling on?
I don't know, maybe a roulette thingy or something.
Yeah, I might have done, yeah.
But you, yeah. I think you were doing it, to be fair, because you were needing breaks, because you were writing.
It was hard. It was hard. You know, it was.
I know.
It was a difficult thing. Well, because we got, it was a successful sitcom, and we got like 9 more episodes halfway through the series. So it was nuts because we were ostensibly working together. That cast was all fucking insane, I have to say. So we were set in a bar, and I don't know if all the drinks were real, but everyone was drunk all the time.
Yeah.
Everyone, yeah. And like there were fights.
Do you remember when I got knocked over by the black cab?
I do remember when it got knocked over by the black cab. I didn't know if you'd want to talk about it. It's. I told Lorraine Kelly about it. Not that I didn't say it was you, but I did a joke. I was on the Lorraine Kelly show, and I said I saw my girlfriend get knocked over. And to see someone you love being smashing into the concrete, just one of the most amazing things.
Yes.
It was. You know, we left a pub, and
I was chasing after Phil Daniels, wasn't I?
I think so. I think you thought we were in a courtyard, and you just ran straight into the road and got knocked over by a cab, and then refused to get in an ambulance.
Yeah, no, I remember hitting the ground, and I thought, "Ooh, what was that?" And the cab driver got out and went, "Oh God, blimey! Oh no, no, no! Sorry, that's very stereotypical." Yeah. But he did talk like that.
He did. He was.
I love black cabbies. And he goes, "You put a dent in my grill." and then an ambulance came, and they sat me in the back, and I didn't want to go in the ambulance.
That's right.
And they tried to shut the doors, and then I seem to remember Phil Daniels. Like that. And the door, they opened the doors. He went, "Oi! She said she don't want to go to hospital, so she ain't going to hospital. She wants to go back in the pub. Come on!" And I was like, "Yeah." And then I went back in the pub.
Yeah. I think that's right. That's accurate.
We did.
Your phone and wallet got knocked all over the road and someone stole them.
Oh, yeah!
And Mark Bannerman went to try and find your phone and then disappeared for about a day and I thought he'd been murdered. If that's what was going on behind the scenes in Time General, please, we should have made that the sitcom.
There was a point where
you and Phil Daniels had a fight. I wasn't there because I was writing. You got drunk and had a fight down some stairs. You fought each other down some stairs. So, you know, there was a lot of drink going on. And there was but it was a very intense, you know, we did 22, it was like an American style sitcom. 22 episodes and, you know, over 20... Rebecca Front got pregnant during it.
Oh, yes,
and then we had to write that into the script. So she, by the end of the script, she was visibly pregnant. So she had a baby in Time General Police only because she got pregnant halfway through Time General Police. That's how long Time General Police
I really was. Did underestimate how much pressure you were under.
It was,
and I
it was
apologize.
Crazy. No, well, I look, I, if I've done any of the things you've said... I would certainly apologise for those.
You couldn't even look me in the eyes, could you?
But, no.
I like your hair, by the way.
Thank you.
Do you not remember saying that was it your dad that taught you that you should always say to women that you like, that your hair looks nice?
Yeah, I think it was something I discovered in my amazing understanding of womankind.
Right.
We did it as a joke. You say, "I like your hair. I like your hair." That's the Al Murray hand. "I like your hair."
All right.
"What are you interested in?" "I'm interested in that too." That was his chatting up thing. But thank you. I like your hair
I really do like
thank
your hair.
Thank you. Julia Sawala fancies me. Yeah.
I don't like your boots, though.
No. I don't like them either. It's okay. You've got to watch out for that. It was just such an incredible time, and it's amazing that was like 22 years ago that we did that sitcom. So, you know, it does not seem possible.
I know.
But look, we should talk about some of the other stuff you've done. Maybe not some of the other guys you've done, but we'll talk about some of the.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I've got nicknames for all my ex-boyfriends.
Yeah, go on, you've got something. Let's find out about this.
Do you want to guess yours?
Huge cock.
Let me try and think of some of the other ones. Unmentionable is okay. One, because okay. We literally can't say his name because okay. It makes us all feel ill.
Okay.
Psychopath okay. Is another one. And there's a few more. My mum always says, which one's psychopath? And
I think I can guess. I'm putting it together.
You'll never guess.
Okay. I won't guess my own one.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
And it wasn't me.
Okay.
It really wasn't me. But I do think it's rather adorable.
Okay.
Winnie the Pooh.
Why can't I be a psychopath? Winnie the Pooh. Fucking hell. Would Winnie the Pooh wear boots like this? I don't think so.
I said to her, I'm doing a podcast with Richard Terry. She went, Winnie the Pooh?
Good. That's good. That's good. Let's talk about some of your other fantastic work. Hey, look, I want to talk to you. I mean, you've literally worked with all of my comedy heroes, I would say. So, and you know, we know about Absolutely Fabulous. Obviously, you've worked with, you were in Bottom. See, I don't think I knew that. So I've never, ever talked to you about this. So you've worked with Rick Mayall and Aid Edmondson, who are yes. Two of my absolute heroes.
Yes, Aid played my husband in Jonathan Creek as
of course,
well.
Yeah,
I did work with Rick Mayall, who was a tour de force. And I kind of stood in the rehearsal rooms, which were the same rooms that I rehearsed Absolutely Fabulous in, but with a completely different set of people.
Right.
And it was quite, well, we were very female-dominated cast, and it was very male. But to watch Rick work was just quite extraordinary, and just took your breath away, really.
Yeah.
And to watch the two of them work together, it was just magic. And by that time, I had started to absorb and ground myself, because I hadn't really landed with Absolutely Fabulous at all. When I walked into the room on the first day of Ab Fab, I was so terrified. And, you know, June Whitfield, apart from anything, you know, I grew up with her and Joanna and then Jennifer and Jane, and it took me a long time to sort of ground and absorb and, just accept that I was accepted. So then to go and do an episode of Bottom, I was just like, I just remained very still and quiet and dull, really,
right.
And let the whirlwind go on around me. But I remember it
as if I was, you know, as if it is happening now. Yeah. I'll never forget it.
Yeah, it's, well, you know, it's a great, incredible. You work with Michael Palin as well, which again,
yes,
in
Remember Me.
Yes. so you know, but, so and you, what are you doing?
Another
you
gentleman.
Didn't, yeah, he's a very nice man indeed. Mm. He's done this podcast as well. It's incredible. You didn't do much acting with him, but you spent a lot of time with him on the set as well.
And we did the read through together, yeah. And yeah, he was just very gentle, yeah. Gentleman. Not loud and sort of, you know, like Rick Mayall.
No,
was. I mean, yeah. You couldn't stop Rick Mayall. His energy was just extraordinary.
Yeah,
it's funny with comedians. When you work with them as actors, because when I was doing Absolutely Fabulous, and it took me a series before I said to Jane, I can't take this anymore, I can't take it, because Jennifer would write some scenes and she wouldn't quite finish them, and a sentence, and I'd say, what do I say at the end of this sentence? And she'd say, oh, I don't know, just make something up. And I'd think, I'm not Dawn French! You know, I think she was very used to working in a double act, and I think it took her a while. Well, I spoke to Jane about it, and I said, I don't know what to do. I can't ab lib all the time. I can't keep up with this because I can't come out with funny things.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can when you work together, but not off the cuff.
No, well, it's not.
And and it was the same in Bottom. It's they just have a very different way of working because they you know, they're just naturally funny people.
Yeah.
Whereas give me lines and I can find the comic timing, but I can improvise in drama, but in comedy I find it much harder.
That's interesting. I mean, because I do think of you as, you know, being like a supreme comedy actress, because it's, you know,
you keep correcting yourself.
I do, because I know you want to be called an actress.
Yes, I
would, you know, like the Native American thing again. But it's against all of my instincts. But you know, that's interesting you say that. With Ab Fab, it's you know, it's a very funny show, but it's a really, really fucked up show as well, right? So that family is really, the family itself is so dysfunctional.
Yeah.
And your character, even though you're the sort of mother in a way in the relationship, is, you know, increasing as it goes on, it just becomes clear how Safi's, it's quite a dramatic role, right? Because she's in a lot of trouble, really, as a human being, as a result
she's
of this.
She's completely screwed up.
Yeah.
And I think, I always said it's very important. You know, situation comedy is about the situation that people are in.
Yeah.
And I think that's why a lot of the scenes in the kitchen worked really well, because that's the hub, that's the family home. And it was very important that for me that Safi never went and got therapy. And Jennifer was like, oh yeah, what you mean, she actually likes it. She's getting something out of this. Because, you know, Safi had quite a nice life, really.
Yeah.
You know, she was living off her mum. That, you know, it was highly dysfunctional. It had to remain that way because a lot of families are very dysfunctional and don't work on themselves and do smash through each other's boundaries.
Yeah.
And they thrive off that toxicity. And if you were to get any therapy, well, you either go off and live your own life or you don't survive. So it was very important that Safi was... It always, in my mind, Safi was pretty toxic.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks that Safi is this long-suffering, straight-laced character, but that is not my subtext at all.
No. Well, and
she wanted to be loved by her mum,
yeah,
no doubt, and she did not like Patsy because Patsy was incredibly cruel to her. But she had her motives, you know.
Yeah.
And she did get her kicks out of winding Adina up.
Yeah.
You know.
And she could have left. She was an adult for most of it.
Well, exactly. And that's why I insisted that she had to remain, you know, not going out and getting herself together, because she needed, you know, she needed that nice life.
Yeah.
Not even if it was a conscious thing, you know.
Yeah. No, it's really, you know, it's interesting. And it's interesting how, you know, that you have to take the comedy that seriously, I think, to make it work. It has to have that darkness behind it, which I don't think most people would like pick up consciously on, right? And I think subconsciously you go, yeah, this is a fucked up thing, but we're really just enjoying
the
madness of
it. I think in the first few episodes in the first series it was flowing along, and then once you start to understand, get hold of your character and get some meat on it, for want of a better term, you know, if you're given a line, I would say, but why would I say that? That just is not Safi. It's on the second series, the costume designer came up with a rail of clothes and said, these are your clothes for Safi. And I was like, I'm not wearing any of those. I went to Jennifer and she said, Jennifer wants you to wear them. So I went to Jennifer and I said, they were nice clothes. Whereas now all clothes that Safi wears are now the thing to wear, so they're not naff anymore. And I went to Jennifer and I said, well, why do you want me to wear nice clothes? And she said, I just want you to look nice on television. So nice. But I said, that doesn't work for me. I can't play Safi. I cannot play Safi in those clothes.
But it's interesting because you were playing, you know, glamorous roles, or, you know, with the Linda Day and the Faith in the Future, that, you know, that was a glamorous character. So it was interesting to take on a role that was, you know, you were deliberately, someone sent me a, I can't remember what it was, but like it was a Halloween costume, which is Safi, but it just says Dowdy Bitch, Woman or something. Yeah.
Bitch Troll from Hell.
Right, yeah, yes. I think it's that, yeah. And so like it, but you know, that's... You know, that's a bold move to make, I think, as well, isn't it? To sort of deliberately take apart characters.
The first week, I was thinking, what am I going to wear? What am I going to wear? And I just kept thinking tracksuits. And I said, no. And I said, take me to the BBC costume department, which was massive.
Yeah, I remember it. Yeah.
Do you remember it?
Yeah.
Huge rails and rails and rails of, you know, every era of... and I just said, take me to what is Oxfam, because Safi would go to Oxfam just to annoy her mother. That's, you see, where the subtext is there, where the toxicity is.
Yeah.
Did it to annoy her mother. She probably had a whole other wardrobe that Adina didn't know about. Nothing too untoward, but... You know, she did it to irritate her. And so we went down this road and I just picked out corduroys, jumper, shirt. I said, everything, just don't match any of it. And as soon as I climbed into it, it all happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but you see, it's interesting you're saying, you know, you weren't comfortable with the improvising, you felt you couldn't improvise. But that's you that's informed that character and created that character. That isn't Jennifer. She was trying to put you in different clothes and you've chosen the clothes and you've worked out the relationship, which again, I think, you know, that's what's interesting about Ab Fab is she's Jennifer's chosen who, and she's a good actor as well, and an actress. But she's, you know, she's Jane Horrocks, I remember, was doing all the Mike Lee films before that, and obviously, you know, and both the others, the June and
the Jays, June, Jennifer, Joanna.
There's too many Julia. Jays. Joe, I really think with June Whitfield, again, I think you mentioned, I saw you being interviewed by both Richard and Judy and Holly and Phil. So there's not many interviews you've done. And those were obviously
I
know, there was some time apart. Richard Madeley
I hate
was,
them.
Richard Madeley was being quite inappropriate with you.
Was he?
You said, he just likes making comments about it. You said, you're very tanned. You know, you went, it's makeup. He said, oh, careful putting on so much makeup when you're so young and all this stuff. He was just like, fuck off, Richard Madeley. You were going off to India. He was a bit too excited about it. But then you were with Philip Schofield and you told him you fancied Philip Schofield. Yeah. Philip Schofield.
The Silver Fox and I said I used to fancy him when he was in the broom cupboard.
And, you know, he made a good pretense of fancying you back, Julian. <That's all. laughs> but so I'm very honoured that you've come and been interviewed here. But I think June Whitfield, out of all those people, when you look at her career, I tried to book her for... I did a radio show called Relativity and I tried to get her to play my grandma in that, and it was, you know, it was quite near to the end of her life, but she didn't, and sadly she died. That's probably the main sadness. The second sadness is that she didn't do it, but she was such an amazing force, that woman, when you look at everything that she did.
Yes.
So to have this incredible cast and then a bit of improvisation, a bit of, you know, what I love about Jennifer is she's... It's a bit like, turning up and seeing what happens, isn't it? And like sometimes there's no script and sometimes there's a bit of a script and sometimes she knows where she's going and sometimes it's let's see what happens, I think, with her. And it's
she comes in with a structure.
Yeah.
And that once we worked our way of working out with each other and we had our characters, what was so wonderful about doing that job was that she allowed us to give our suggestions, and she said, yeah, let's do that. Yes, let's do that. No, my character wouldn't do this. And so it was a collaborative affair.
Yeah.
You did feel really, really involved. Whereas in the first series, we were Jane, Joanna, June and myself were actresses who are given lines and are given a mark. You stand on that mark and the camera will be there and you do your lines. And Jennifer was just this free spirit of, you know, just do whatever you like, just say whatever you like. I don't know, I'm going to say this to you. And as I walk out the room, just make something up. And once we got over that, and once we started building our characters, I think then Jennifer could work write for our characters. Yeah. Oh, but, we did spend most of the day laughing.
Good, but that's you know, that's but that's why you know this thing is when you look at sitcoms of the last 20 or 30 years, there's you know it's right up there, and also it was been going on for all that. I mean, I don't know if you're ever going to return to it. I'm presuming probably not, but then you've said that every year, pretty much it's been on. It's been like this is the last series, isn't it?
Well, I don't. I think Jennifer does. I think I read somewhere a couple of years ago, I think Jennifer might have been doing something at the Edinburgh Festival, doing reading or something, and she said it wouldn't be accepted in this day and age. And I think completely the opposite. Because it wasn't what we used to call politically correct then.
Yeah.
And that's why everyone was like, yes, you're saying everything we can't say. And I think Jennifer is intelligent enough to write it in a way where we can say things that need to be said.
Yeah.
Because the cancel culture and the wokeness, I'm not going to go down this route.
But look, you know, I don't think when you look back at Little Britain, you think, oh, okay, some of that wouldn't fly now. You don't look back. I honestly don't think you look back at Absolutely Fabulous and go, oh, God, why did they say that? Because you know why they said it.
Absolutely,
I mean,
yeah.
Some of Little Britain, I think the things that people complain about, you go, look, no, they were obviously taking the piss out of that. They were trying to take the piss out of that. But it doesn't fly anymore. Whereas I think Abfab, they still show it and it's still absolutely fine. You know, they're not politically correct characters, but that's the point. And neither's David Brent, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You can still show The Office. So it's about the heart behind it as much as as anything. So I think it would still fly. Let me quickly go on.
I love the way you've got a book and not an iPad.
Thank you. And it's got Rod Halenemi on it.
I love
so, you
paper
know.
And... Ooh, that's a bit creepy.
Yeah. I remember, and this is shows again. This shows what a dedicated and fantastic performer you are. When you went on Stars in Their Eyes and did Karis Matthews, absolutely incredible. And I've heard people talk about it like 20 years.
Oh
on.
Yeah, you were there, weren't you?
Yeah, I was there. I was in the audience.
Oh,
I was crying in the audience. They cut to the audience, and I had a tear in my eyes. But how amazing you were!
Were you there the night before?
I was there the night before.
Do you remember the people throwing the furniture across the room?
In the corridor.
In the ceiling.
Yeah, there was a lot of noise. I think it was one of the girls from Brookside or something.
Yeah, because it's a... Coronation Street.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, because it's a hotel that they put actors in up in Manchester.
Yes.
And I was up all night, wasn't I? I was going absolutely insane. And I kept calling down to the porter, the night porter saying, can you do something? They literally sounded like they were throwing chairs like this across the ceiling all night long.
It was very noisy. I do remember. But you still, even with no sleep, and Karis Matthews got your number and rang you up the minute. Do you remember that? She rang you up after it had been on air. You won Stars in Her Eyes because you bothered to do it properly. So, which some of the celebrities didn't necessarily do. But it was extraordinary. But that's, you know, I was with you while you were rehearsing. You took it so seriously.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did I?
Yeah. But it's good, right? I mean, it's out Stars in Their Eyes, but it's good.
Yeah, well, you sort of signed yourself. I was singing in the back of a car. You were probably in the car. And Mark Bannerman was in the car. And he was doing Elvis.
That's right, yeah.
In another, the week before. And I was singing Keris. And he said, oh, you should do Stars in Their Eyes. And so I got my agent to ask them, and they said, come in. And I thought, oh, they've said yes. And they said, go on, sing it then. I was like, oh, crikey. So I sang it, and then I thought, that'll be it. You know, yes, you can do it. But, yeah, had to put a lot of work in. Yeah. And it was really, really terrifying. The most terrifying thing was walking out those doors, because you have four steps and they blow this smoke, and you open the doors and they, and you've got someone in your ear saying, walk three steps and then smile and then walk down the steps, but don't look down. And you can't see the steps anyway. So that was the most terrifying part of the performance, actually, is getting down the steps. But yeah, I don't know if that's something I regret doing.
Oh.
I try not to regret things.
You shouldn't regret anybody. You shouldn't regret that you were extraordinary. And even Keris Matthews thought you were good as being.
Yeah, she rang me up and said, I hear someone, you might be taking over my job. Because I'd met her a year before at a train station, and I absolutely love her. And we ended up travelling back, I think it was from Somerset, to London together. And so I could really, really listen to her. And then I just used to sing Road Rage all the time, and then that happened.
And then you were. Then
yeah,
you...
someone told me I might be out of a job. I was really, really touched.
That was amazing. Right, I'm going to ask you one emergency question.
Only one?
Yep.
Because I think there'll be one.
You can ask me one, but after I've asked you one, I don't know that you've got an answer for this, but I'm going to say you definitely have got an answer for this.
Oh, is it fairies?
No. Similar area.
Because they do exist.
I know.
And I don't mean Tinkerbell ones. I've been wanting to say this to you for 21 years. I think he thinks I believe in those Tinkerbell things. I mean nature spirits. Mother Earth.
Yeah.
How do you think it all works, Richard?
It's atoms flying around.
Yes, of course, that as well.
And science. Medicine. Lots of medicine. What I was going to ask you, I don't know if you've got an answer to this, but I bet you have. And I bet you have.
Is it not a rather?
I know. Have you ever seen a ghost, Julius Weller?
Yes. I'm clairaudient, not clairvoyant.
Okay.
So I
you've
hear.
Heard, you've heard a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was a ghost in the hotel throwing the chairs around. We blamed
possibly.
It on the Coronation Street.
Yeah. Yes, I have.
Yeah, what have
I
you heard?
I have seen, yes, saw one when I was about 13. And in the house I lived in Somerset, I don't say haunted and I don't say possessed. There was a well, funnily enough.
Right. So close.
Underneath my kitchen floor, which I wasn't aware of.
Yes, right.
And there are two ley lines that cross it.
Yeah.
This is after there were... I keep sucking his teeth. There were many, many, many goings on that were just getting too much for me. And I lived there on my own, you know, like latches being bent back and I'd have to have a pair of pliers by the door to bend them back so I could lock the door at night. Thumping on the ceiling, balls bouncing down the... not your ball.
Thank you.
I had to get it in, didn't I? just lots of things going on and doors rattling. So I went to a medium and she said that I have this well under the floor and that these ley lines cross it and it's a portal for lost souls. Oh.
Wow.
I've won. There's a fairy. And so there were lost souls wandering around my house, but also the man who used to live there, he was the one that was there all the time. And I knew that. And I had the deeds to the house. And I went to see a neighbour who knew this guy called Mr. Flowers. And I changed the name back to Flowers Cottage in respect of him, hoping that he would calm down a bit. And he had gone slightly mad because his wife had passed away in childbirth. And my boyfriend at the time, before he dumped me, he saw her lying in our bed. I was driving to Bath and he rang me up and he said, are you driving to Bath? And I said, yes. He said, because I've just seen you in bed. And he's like you, medicine, yeah. No spirituality at all. And I said, no, I'm driving to Bath. So he saw the ghost.
Right.
Everybody who used to come to visit me in that house after I sold the house said, oh, yeah, it was really haunted. It was a lovely house, but we hated it there.
Yeah.
So in answer to your question, yes, hear and see.
Yeah, good. I believe you. I believe it's true.
I don't call them ghosts. I call them spirits.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're ghosts, though.
Ghosts are silly, silly, silly names.
So, Julia, I look, I think that, you know, you've had an amazing career. It's... You seem to have found some more peace in your life through.
Why do you say that?
Because I think you've seen.
Because I'm not screaming and throwing things at you.
Me. So I have to text you to tell you I've dumped you. You're being nice. So it's I've seen Instagram. You're saying you've been to South America and places, and done some retreats and that sort of thing.
Yes,
is it? Because it's I don't want to talk about specific cases, but sometimes in our show business world, it can be difficult as actresses get older and people change things and move things around. Are you? I'm trying to pussyfoot around.
Say what you mean.
Jobs going to different actors who may be younger that maybe were jobs that you had did in the past. I was just going to talk about that. We'll move on. We'll move on in it.
Are you talking about Chicken Run?
I am talking about Chicken Run, yeah. I know you don't want to talk about it directly, so I was trying to go around it as a general theme.
Go on.
Well, it seems a shame to me. I mean, I was very.
You were with me, weren't you? You were there.
I was with you at the. We went to the premiere of that. You were amazing in that film. It was an amazing film, Chicken Run, and it makes me extremely angry. Is what I'm trying to say about that. So that you are not in Chicken Run 2, and there's absolutely no reason you shouldn't be in Chicken Run 2. It's absolutely pathetic. So. I can say it, right? You don't have to say it. Shall I just say all the things, then you don't have to say anything? Because, you know, and so that's... But that's... and because, I guess you did... So, you know, you did so well so quickly in your career that it's... You know, is that something that's happening a lot, do you think? Not just to you, to everyone in general? And is that something that's being dealt with well in the business?
I think 98% of the business is rejection... And 2% is joy.
Yeah.
And that 2% of joy is in your veins and you can't stop it. It's just you need it. And so you put up with the rejection.
Yeah.
Chicken Row. Chicken Run was the most, the hardest rejection I've dealt with in my career.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way... in which the message was delivered to me. It was a blow.
Yeah.
And I fought for it with the creatives because I felt that possibly I should have been allowed to be given a voice test.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did what I did on Twitter. Stupidly, because I just that's the one thing I like about social media is that you can do your own PR.
Yeah.
And I thought I don't want magazines, I don't want papers asking me because they'll take everything out of context. I'm going to say it all myself, get it out of my system, done, gone, over, let it go. And as far, whose phone is that? Turn it off.
It's all over the place.
That's all right.
Felt like that went all across the room.
Like cricket. but as far as... I think it's getting better for older women. I think actors, male actors... I like to be called an actress, not an actor. I think male actors, it's getting harder for them as well. But I don't like the way that younger actresses are always cast against older actors to play husband and wife.
Yeah, yeah.
That still hasn't changed. And actresses in their 50s, I'm 55, you know, you get roles sent to you and you're some, you know, bitter old, twisted old bitch that the husband doesn't want. You never get the sort of glamorous, or not glamorous, but, you know, yeah, just a, basically they don't, they're still writing for women like they're, like women were in the 40s when we didn't really have, you know, every single woman in this audience will be wearing something different, where in the 40s, you know, it was all pretty much... I saw something on Twitter, someone said, please post a picture of yourself, please post a picture of your grandmother. And all the women posted a picture of themselves in their 50s and their grandmothers in their 50s, and all the women in the 1940s looked exactly the same in their 50s. But writers aren't writing for women in their 50s. It's like we don't have a life. It's like we're not interesting. And that's frustrating. But it's changing.
I mean, especially if you're playing in a... Especially if you're playing a chicken, though, right? Because it's... That's, it's...
Yeah, just the
just the voice of the chicken. Well, look, it's, you know, I think it's a crazy decision, but it's, you know, I hope you know, it's
you're allowed to say it because you were, we were with each other when
and I love, you know, I love the, you know, I love the Arden guy, so I'm sort of, you know, I know it's the decisions are come from different places and all of that, but you know, it does seem, it seems out of kilter with them and their basic ethos as well, so it's, you know, it's, it is disappointing. I did tell, I remember when we went to the premiere, I met Nick from Nick Parks, who did the
who did the
whole thing. And I, the first thing I said to him was, "I shoplifted your video when I was at university, and you were annoyed with me, but I did." I shoplifted Creature Comforts. I'll pay him. I offered him a tenner, I think. To pay back.
They said to me, nobody's going to know who you're, the children aren't going to know your voice. And I said, but the children in 2000 didn't know my voice.
No.
I don't think that's what gets children into cinema.
No. And it's, you know, I've got kids and they'll go, why is the voice changed? They'll just go, why is it a different voice?
You're going to tell them first. I won't.
But if they watch both those films,
that'd be
back,
interesting.
They would go, why is the voice changed? When my daughter looked over my shoulder, she's 8 and a half, and I was looking at an interview with you, and she said, "Is that a mermaid?" when she saw a picture of you.
Are you joking?
No, I'm not. She said, "Is that a mermaid?"
No, you said, "No, it's a fairy."
I said, "No, it's a human being." Stop being so silly. Get to your room. Get to your room and write some maths equations down. She was off school today. She wasn't very well. But she's okay. Oh, my God, I'm bleeding.
Why?
How did that happen?
Are you bleeding for me?
Yeah, fuck.
Are you all right? Don't get it on your boots.
I'll put it on my book so that I remember that she made me
the
bleed.
The horror of
it
all.
I didn't even touch myself. I'm bleeding. Fucking hell. I'm going to rethink my life. I'm going to rethink
it. It's that red Indian spirit guy. Native American.
He's coming. Well, look, thank you so much for coming on this, Julia. I know it means an awful lot to me. I'm very sorry for the terrible things I did.
Thank you for asking me. I don't really look at Instagram messages, and I was trying to sort out my internet and this thing came up and it said something, something herring. And I thought, well, it wants to send you a message. And I thought, I wonder if that's Richard. And so I clicked on it and you invited me on this, and I didn't even think twice.
I know, it was very nice of you.
I don't do interviews, and I'm not saying that in a diva-like way. It's just people always have an agenda and a motive, and they try and lead you. And I don't like talking to the press because they hack me, and they take everything out of context. And so I just stopped speaking.
Yeah.
And but I felt safe with you.
Oh, well, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for the amazing Julia Swallow. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Julia Sawala. Thank you to Scant Regard for doing the music on this thing. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker, and to Chris Evans, not that one, and Ben Evans, not that one. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. Thank you to everyone at Acast. And thank you to George, the incompetent sound man, who's only made one major error in this whole tour so far. So, you know, it's not so bad. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production! I mean, it was only the microphones not working at all. That's, you know, that's not... That's not...
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks again for listening to the podcast. RichardHerring.com/ballback/tour or RichardHerring.com/gigs for all of the information on the tour. GoFasterStripe.com for lots of downloads and books and lots of fun. Thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your friends about the tour. I love you all. I'm out.